The next case is 09-1230, Allen County Bar Association versus Christie Brown. Justice Cupp has recused himself in this case. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cupp, Judge Thomas Osowick, who's a judge of the Court of Appeals in the 6th Appellate District. Welcome, Judge Osowick.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Mr. Petrov.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court, I'm Alan Petrov. I represent the respondent, Christie Brown. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
This case, unlike the prior case, is one where the violations are stipulated, but the only issue before the court is the sanction. Ms. Brown acknowledges violations of neglect on two client matters. This matter was presented to the panel on stipulation. Prior to the hearing, Ms. Brown and the relator, the Allen County Bar Association, stipulated as to facts, conclusions of law, and violations. The parties also stipulated to recommend the sanction of a public reprimand, a recommendation that was based upon the parties' joint analysis of precedent of this court, of the facts of the case, of all of the circumstances that go to mitigation and aggravation. The hearing was held here in Columbus. It was a relatively brief hearing. Ms. Brown was the only witness. The panel and the board's report adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law in essence and agree with the violations that the parties proposed. However, the panel and the board have recommended to this court that Ms. Brown be suspended for 12 months with that entire suspension stayed upon four conditions: an evaluation by OLAP, a mentoring program, certain CLE, and no additional misconduct. We have filed objections to that recommendation and ask that this court impose the sanction of a public reprimand, not because it is what the parties agreed to in advance of the hearing, but because it is the just sanction to impose. I'd like to review with the court some of the basic factors that that come into play when this court assesses what an appropriate sanction is. One of the paramount factors is, has the attorney's conduct caused any harm? And here it is stipulated that no harm was caused. Both of these matters were collection cases. They were neglected, one completely, one only after a period of time after which some collection and recovery were made, but it is stipulated that no harm was caused to either client. It is also important in this court's analysis of appropriate sanctions whether an attorney has profited by the misconduct or acted in any self-interest, and that's not the case here. The court also takes into account whether there have been any misrepresentations by an attorney to either the client or to the court, and that is not the case here. The court takes into account whether there is a circumstance of prior discipline, and there is none here. The court takes into account whether restitution has been made to clients, and full restitution has been made here. The court also takes into account whether the attorney is remorseful for the conduct, and the record of in this case is abundantly clear that Ms. Brown has remorse. She testified at the hearing as to why she became a lawyer and what she takes satisfaction out of the practice as a lawyer, and her answer was that it is helping her clients, benefiting her clients, satisfying her clients, and that she feels terribly that she let these particular clients down. So considering all of the circumstances and the precedent of this court, we do submit that a public reprimand is the appropriate sanction. We've cited in our brief situations in which attorneys who have caused some prejudice to their clients through neglect have received a public reprimand. There are situations where, I forgot to mention, another factor is cooperating in the grievance process, and there's no question but that Ms. Brown fully cooperated here. So we have cited in our brief, we've cited in our additional authorities, many cases in which lawyers who've engaged in neglect in some ways similar to Ms. Brown's neglect, but in other ways more serious, because they've caused harm or because they have not expressed remorse or because they haven't made restitution, have received public reprimands. And it is perplexing to us that a public reprimand was not the recommendation of the board here.
Counsel, it seems as though the board is concerned that because your client intends to remain a solo practitioner and her association apparently now is with an attorney who may be retiring soon, that the idea of a continued mentor is what is suggesting the alternative sanction here.
I agree with that assessment. I do think that the board's comment that Ms. Von der Ems, the other sole practitioner with whom Ms. Brown is now sharing space, intends to retire soon isn't borne out by the record. But you know, the background here is that Ms. Brown began her career in a firm. When she went out on her own in 2000, she at first shared space with one attorney and then for a time had an associate with in her employ. And it was only after that associate departed in 2004 that these two cases where neglect occurred began. And it, you know, it's sometimes difficult to recognize a problem while it's occurring, but the filing of these grievances and going through the disciplinary process has made it clear to Ms. Brown that she shouldn't be practicing without any support. She wants to have a network, an associate, somebody that she can commiserate with, someone who can provide coverage for her, someone who can help with the burden. And at the moment, that happens to me to be Ms. Von der Ems. If Ms. Von der Ems should retire someday, I'm sure that Ms. Brown, knowing now what she does know, will make satisfactory arrangements. I do appreciate the panel's concern and the board's concern, but the statement in the opinion that the panel believes there's more to the story, and then to impose what seems like an overly severe sanction, I don't think is fair to the respondent. The sanction should fit the violation, not some supposition that there may be more involved. So, you know, there is a cynic could say, well, what's the difference between a stayed suspension and a public reprimand? Because in either event, the attorney is permitted to practice. But somebody in my position, counseling Ms. Brown, we don't know what will happen. No one expects that there's going to be any further grievance against her. But should there be one for something rather modest during the terms of this suspension, she will have to serve a one-year suspension in the event of further discipline because of these violations, which really don't, in my view, justify the imposition of that sanction. So it is important because no one really knows what's going to happen in the future, and this court's role at this time is to assess what's an appropriate sanction for what's occurred in the past, not to anticipate what might occur in the future.
Do you not agree that if we were to impose a public reprimand, that the conditions recommended by the board should be imposed?
Well, I was thinking about that last evening. I'm not, we wouldn't object to that if the rules permit that. I don't know that that conditions can attach to a public reprimand, but if they can.
We usually do it. I have to look at the rules, see whether we can, but it seems to me the conditions are really to help her. I mean, if she has stress and loss management, she admitted that she neglected multiple clients, she had multiple grievances. I mean, why wouldn't she want those conditions?
Well, it's the suspension. It's the suspension.
Sure, I understand
that's
that,
the issue. And she really is addressing the, Ms. Von Der Ems is, in essence, a mentor. She's moved in with another attorney that can help her with the stress and help her with her practice. The record reflects that Ms. Brown wants to take a CLE on law office management. There was an irony that the one she wanted to attend was the day of the hearing in back in January. So she's going to do those things, and she has made changes in her practice and will. She's got self-awareness that she lacked before, and she will continue to follow through. So it isn't the conditions, Your Honor, that are troubling. It is the imposition of the suspension, even though it is stayed. And I will reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Petroff. Mr. Fitzgerald.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, good afternoon now. My name is Bob Fitzgerald. I represent the relator of the Allen County Bar Association. I find myself here in a rather awkward position. Not only do I personally know and like and respect Ms. Brown, I also entered into an agreement with Mr. Petroff and Ms. Brown originally to do a public reprimand. And long ago, before I had gray hair, I remember lawyers are allowed to make deals, whether those deals are good deals or bad deals. Regardless of what transpired, the panel heard all the evidence, and though it was an abbreviated hearing, based upon a lot of things that were stipulated upon, the panel paid close attention, I believe, to a couple of issues. And unfortunately, it came to me much too belatedly to clarify the issue, either for my brief or really for a proper presentation. Because what Mr. Petroff has noted was, first thing, as we talked about Christie going into an association with another attorney, and they did focus on that. Then they focused on another issue that I thought became an issue that I would consider to be one of an aggravation. As Mr. Petroff has pointed out, there were extensive mitigating circumstances before the imposition of the sanction in this case. But the one issue, and I think it's now the issue that this court needs to decide, is whether that one single aggravation would override and supersede the mitigating circumstances for Ms. Brown. And because I entered into an agreement, I can't really enter an opinion, but I know this. From reading the decisions, this court and the rules that we have now are one intended not to be punitive for attorneys, but one to protect the public. And in this situation, what I think that the panel, and again, I may be wrong, but what I think the panel imposed upon or centered upon was the fact that there was a mentor, a volunteer mentor, weeks before the filing of the complaint before the commission, was an opportunity for Ms. Brown. She was given the opportunity to meet with a mentor on a voluntary basis to assist her, and she chose not to do that. And the
Is there any kind of explanation as to why she met with the mentor once and then never proceeded with that?
There was one explanation, and it wasn't a complete explanation. Ms. Brown testified that she got busy. She did receive an email from the mentor and never rescheduled. I will tell you that though this is not in the record, that original meeting was set up with a third party to introduce her and to break the ice, if you will, with that mentor to lay out kind of the rough groundwork. So that was that first meeting. So there really wasn't any mentoring at that time. It was just the introduction. But as I recall the record and the testimony, it was that she became busy and just didn't follow through with it, which is consistent with what happened with the, which led to the grievance filed by DeVuti and by Collins.
And all this activity that is complained of took place between 2005 and 2007, correct?
Your Honor, that is correct, except in January of 2007, the respondent received, Ms. Brown received a letter from Collins saying, please return the transcript, please return the money. And yes, that's the period of time where all the active, if I will, ignoring of the case took place. But again, throughout 2007, after she had received letters in June, October, and then January to do something, she did nothing in 2007. So yes, the active period of time was, Your Honor, 05 and 06 and early part of 07. But it was thereafter, then she just did nothing in either of those cases.
Counsel, the board did not discuss a number of other cases where we have issued public reprimands as recommended by both parties. And I believe that counsel has at least 9 cases that the sanction is a public reprimand. I assume you've had a chance to review those cases, and are they distinguishable from Ms. Brown, or do they fall within the same parameters?
Your Honor, I have reviewed them, and there are more than 9, particularly if you look at the different briefs that were submitted throughout this case. They are distinguishable in a couple of fashions. There is one I think is very similar, but the one that is the most similar was, again, a situation where the parties had agreed, both the respondent and the relator had agreed to the imposition of a public reprimand as the sanction. The other cases can be distinguished somewhat in that some of them, I think, in my opinion, were more grievous actions by the lawyers. The sexual activities that were mentioned in several of the cases, and there were criminal activities in some cases. And in those situations, the lawyers just received a public reprimand. I think that is much more grievous than what happened here. But the one thing that's different between all those cases and this case, and again, it's the reason why I focus on this as an aggravating circumstance, is the fact that none of the cases that I could find and none of the cases that have been cited before this court ever was the attorney given the opportunity to have a mentor voluntarily provided to them before any action was taken.
So she's to lose the chance at a public reprimand that you agreed to and now appear to be retreating from. I mean, if you said you're a man of your word and you agreed to this, your argument has essentially been in defense of what the board has done instead of in support of your agreement. But she's to lose that because she didn't meet with the mentor.
Your Honor, thank you for raising that point. That's why I'm in an uncomfortable position, because quite frankly, I believe a deal is a deal. But I also believe that upon review of the transcript and in this record, there is sufficient evidence to substantiate what the panel did. If you're asking me my personal opinion, I stand by my agreement.
Okay.
Well, we sometimes see parties stipulate before the hearing, and then information is revealed at the hearing that causes even the relator to change its view. So that's not like a deal is a deal and you have to stick to it in the context of new information. Was there new information from the hearing? The mentor obviously is one situation, but was there other information that was revealed at the hearing that would cause the relator here to reasonably change its view?
Your Honor, the only thing, I do not believe so, except that there was something different in that when the complaint was originally filed against Ms. Brown, there were 3 counts. Count 1 with DeVudi, count 2 with Perrine, and count 3 with Gandy. I dismissed count 2 and 3 at the hearing. What happened was that in August of 2008, there was another grievance filed in Columbus with the disciplinary counsel against Ms. Brown, involving Mr. Collins, the attorney in Iowa, Janet Rosian, and her client, Mr. Collins, had contacted and hired Ms. Brown for a collection case, like the DeVudi matter. And that was referred to us, and after I had some investigation was made with Attorney Rosian in Iowa, I amended the complaint with respondent's consent, amended the complaint, and proceeded. So, Your Honor, to that extent, it was different, because the original agreement had been reached and we had even submitted it back earlier in 2008. But at the time of the trial, I don't believe anything was new as far as we had submitted the briefs, the trial briefs, and the stipulations before the hearing. The Collins count had not originally been contained within the original action.
I have a question, and that is, it seems to be the entire emphasis here is simply on this inability or to avail herself of this mentoring program, but it's unclear as to why she didn't avail herself. So is there anything in the record that tells us as to why she didn't take an opportunity for this?
There is no clear-cut answer, Your Honor, but what I think it was a perpetuation and continuation of what she said regarding why she didn't act on the DeVudi collection, or why she didn't
act. Well, we can all conjecture that, but there's nothing in the record.
It's all conjecture. There was nothing clear, Your Honor.
Okay, and the board refers to this Columbus Bar Association versus Michuela case, which by the board's own recognition in the brief indicates that that conduct is much more egregious than this. And how do we square that with egregious conduct versus not availing themselves of this mentor, which was not even a requirement, it was a suggestion of the Bar Association?
Your Honor, you can't. I'm not going to suggest that you can. As I reviewed those cases, when I looked at the Sabree case, and I may be mispronouncing that incorrectly, but when I reviewed the Sabree case and the other cases, and I looked at those cases along with the cases that I had previously submitted, and then looked at all the other cases respondent has submitted, you can't square it. And I'm not going to stand here before and say that you can. If you want to, the one defining issue is that voluntary mentor. That's the only real distinction, the clear distinction, the bright line, as I've heard mentioned this morning, that you can step over or away from. But you can't square it. And I'm not going to suggest that you can. I thank you for the opportunity to appear before you, and ask that the court please give its attention to it and come up with a proper sanction in this case. Thank you, Your
Honor. Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Mr. Petroff, you saved almost 5 minutes of your time.
Let me address the mentor issue. This mentor was a particular individual. It wasn't the proposal to Ms. Brown wasn't find a mentor. The proposal was here's a guy who will be your mentor. Someone she didn't know. This is not really all in the record, and if my argument is therefore improper, disregarded. But Ms. Brown wanted to do it her own way, wanted to find someone to associate with that she would feel comfortable with. And it turned out to be Marie von der Ems. And, you know, there were logistics involved that Ms. Brown's office was on one location in Lima, and she had to move it to another location, and it took a little time to accomplish these things. But the problem was recognized by Ms. Brown, which I think is the critical aspect here, that she recognized that she needed to change the way she practiced. And it wasn't only her association with another lawyer that she changed, but the record does reflect that she changed the way she practices. She's taken no appointments on Fridays now, so she can spend the time with her staff. And
let me interrupt you there. This, in the time sequence, she was presented with the opportunity to mentor with this individual that was identified by the local bar. She decided she didn't want to use that person. She was going to find her own mentor, and that is the woman that she's currently associated with in the office. Is that the time sequence?
Yes.
So she wasn't working with this woman when the mentor was presented to her initially.
She wasn't sharing space with her, and I can't tell you that she was using her as a mentor, but she was intending to associate with her when she could arrange it logistically.
And she didn't communicate that to the people who were reaching out to her from the Bar Association and saying, thanks for setting me up with, you know, so-and-so. But I've been able to work out this arrangement with her current office mate, and this is working out really well.
I don't know. I wasn't yet involved.
Okay.
And also this whole discussion of the mentor didn't come up until after the complaint was filed. This was the suggestion of a mentor wasn't made during 2005 and 2006 and 2007 when the problem with these two clients was occurring, but it was made after the complaint was filed, I think after the complaint was certified. and also before I was involved. I want to direct, one of the cases that we cited as an additional authority is the Schnittke case. It's a 2002 decision, which does involve neglect of two client matters, some very similar to the situation involved here. And a public reprimand was the sanction, and the court made reference in its opinion to the fact that Mr. Schnittke had taken steps voluntarily to change the way that he practiced law, that he had has changed his office procedures to ensure that he will not repeat his misconduct, including having instituted a reliable system for keeping track of court filings and answering telephone calls. And Ms. Brown's done the same thing here, and the record confirms that she's done it here. She's recognized the problem, recognized the need to make changes, has made those changes, and has made them after misconduct, which, while it is misconduct, is the sort of misconduct that in virtually every case that's come before this court, the sanction has been a public reprimand. And I submit to you that that should be the sanction here, that I don't view this mentor as an aggravating circumstance. The court may disagree, but it was part of the process of getting this grievance resolved, and it was kindly of the Bar Association to make the suggestion, but it was a identification of a problem that respondent already knew was a problem, and she set out to solve it in her own way, but an equally valid way. That's how it occurred. I do submit that a public reprimand should be the sanction, and appreciate your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petroff. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal will please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the House.